She's so stubborn. She really cares about him. And there's times as an audience member where you want to be like, Paulina, what are you doing?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year and breaking down the state of the 2024 Emmys race. I'm Entertainment Weekly Executive Editor Jared Hall, and joining me this week is EW Editor-in-Chief and Lead Actor in a Comedy Series nominee, Patrick Gomez.
I will take that nomination. Thank you.
I mean, who wouldn't, right? I was debating, do I put him in drama or comedy? And that's...
We have that debate with a lot of the actual acting nominees, so it makes sense.
We sure do. We sure do. And I didn't mean it to be a bit of a tease, but we're going to kind of be talking about category placement a little later in this episode. But first, I want to let everyone know we are welcoming royalty to the show today. A king is in our presence, very specifically, Joey King. She is starring on the Hulu limited series, We Were the Lucky Ones. If you have not caught that yet, I highly encourage you to do so. You'll hear me tell this to Joey, but it's a series that as the episodes have gone on, I just find myself becoming more and more invested in everything that is happening here. It follows a Polish family during right on the cusp of World War II beginning is when the series starts. And then it actually jumps a bit during time. So it's not all in one confined time period. But we see this family as they scatter, they are separated, and how each of them are essentially trying to survive the war. It's quite compelling television. Also some very light, funny moments in it, but also a series about hope and survival. So I encourage you to check that one out. But you can do that after you listen to this episode of the podcast. So that episode is coming up a little bit later. But before that, and before Patrick and I get into things here, I want to make sure all of you here listening know that we have a phone line where you can call in, leave us a message or question about an interview or about our predictions, whatever might be related to what you're hearing here on The Awardist. And we might play that message during an episode of the podcast. So here is that phone number for you, 656-799-1566, 657-799-1566. You can also find that in the description of the podcast episode wherever you are listening to this podcast. All right, so now to the business at hand. Last week's episode, Patrick, I was kind of messaging you in real time as all of this was happening, because we got such great response from our first episode featuring Nicholas Galitzine and Taylor Zakar Perez, the stars of Red, White, and Royal Blue. I got to say, first of all, thank you so much to all of you who listened, who were tweeting at me, and just had such really nice, wonderful things to say. People were really excited for those two. Patrick, I didn't really realize, some people had pointed this out, it seems like that was the first interview that those two guys did together at all. They did some fun little like games and, you know, concepts, as we call them, with some other outlets and stuff, but they never really got to do an interview together for the movie, because then, of course, the strike started, as we talked about in the podcast. But so everyone was just like waiting, hoping, wondering if they were ever going to get together and talk about it. And here it happened. We didn't necessarily go into it realizing, thinking this is the first one, but it worked out nicely.
EW giving the people what they want. I'm
That's
super excited
for
them to be able to finally get to do that. There's so many projects that came out during that time period. And the strike, of course, as we've said time and time again, was so necessary, and I'm grateful that they did what was needed to get a fair contract. But at the same time, like, your heart goes out to particularly people like these guys, a few other projects that had up and comers that, like, this was supposed to be like a really big break moment for them, and then they weren't able to like fully celebrate that. And so I'm glad that they're getting the opportunity to do that now, and with us.
Yes, exactly. If you folks listening here have not heard that one yet, you can find that right there in the podcast library. Be sure to check that one out. Okay, so today we are talking about some things, as I kind of alluded to earlier, category switching. And I want to start with Ayo Edebiri, who won last year, or technically this year. It was for the 2023 Emmys, which were handed out in 2024. She won in supporting actress in a comedy for season one of The Bear. For season two, she is being upgraded to lead actress. Do you think, Patrick, that's a wise move? What are your feelings about that?
I go back and forth because oftentimes supporting can be the more competitive category. So it might actually be beneficial to guaranteeing a win to get into the lead category. That being said, you know, obviously the size of role is, it's hard to say what the best call is without knowing who else is going to be in the category alongside her. And I think it's well-deserved. I think obviously that role has continued to grow on the show. And we would see this on other shows where some years, particularly on sitcoms, some years on an ensemble sitcom, somebody would go for lead and other years supporting and kind of back and forth between the two. So, you know, it's not unheard of. It's hopefully the right strategic move. But again, it's kind of hard to tell as we're still so far out from those nominations being named of like who truly is going to be front runner. But, you know, I'm assuming her team is looking strategically at it and saying this is the way to elevate her. And to be honest, sometimes it's better in the eyes of some publicists I know that like to get a nomination but not a win in a lead category versus being quote unquote relegated to a supporting status, because if you're a lead, that opens a lot of other doors for other projects for you. So strategically, maybe they're not going for a win. Maybe they're just going to elevate her status in terms of size of role.
I was going to ask you specifically about that. Do you think a lot of it has to do with just saying that Ayo is the lead of a series instead of supporting? I think that definitely has a lot to do with it. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Just by the way, you said, you know, who would she be competing against? Quickly to pull up that list here. Some of the folks, Quinta Brunson, always in the mix for Abbott Elementary. Hacks will be back this season, season three starting in just a few weeks. So Jean Smart back in the mix. Those feel like probably locks for nominations. Having seen all of season three of Hacks, I can say Jean Smart is firing on all cylinders as she typically is. But then we throw into the mix Kristen Wiig for Palm Royale. Selena Gomez is going for season three of Only Murders in the Building. Maya Rudolph is back with Loot. And then it's the final season of Reservation Dogs for Devery Jacobs, who the tuning into the awardist in the coming weeks for more from her. So there are a lot of names. I mean, Girls 5 Eva is back with a new season. Renee Elise Goldsberry is being mentioned. Amy Schumer for Life and Beth. Sarah Lancashire for playing Julia Child in the series Julia. So I feel like she won't have, she being Ayo, won't have difficulty getting the nomination. I'm just not sure I would go so far as to say, and it's hers to lose.
Yeah, no, I think that that's fair. It's going to be a tough category, but even then, some of the names you were listing off just now, I could see making an argument for supporting too. So, you know, it's like she's the one making the headlines for it right now, but a lot of these people could go back and forth, and you know, I have faith that their teams are making very strategic choices.
Yeah. Well, to your point, Girls 5 Eva, I think they could all be supporting because it's an ensemble and we typically see ensemble casts like that go supporting. Yeah. Also, speaking of category switching, this is really interesting because there's got to be a lot at play behind the scenes for this to make sense and to be a kosher thing, quote unquote, legal in the eyes of the Television Academy. There are some rumblings that some studios and producers are mulling the idea of switching their shows from limited series to the drama category, the main drama category, since it is essentially wide open this year. The Crown, The Morning Show seem like Locks as returning series, but there are a lot of new shows that are likely going to get in there. And specifically, some reports are some of our fellow reporters at other outlets have mentioned Masters of the Air, Shogun, and The Sympathizer. So they would have to know when they officially submit by May 9th to the Academy for consideration. They have to essentially show, prove, however they might have to prove, that they will be coming back for a second season. I don't think I would necessarily call this a strategy, because I don't think you sink a ton of money into a second season of a show just so you can switch categories at the Emmys, but that does make the race interesting. That certainly doesn't seem to be the motivation here.
Though, will it be? Because I am curious what this proof that they're going to have to provide is. Because similar to something like White Lotus in its first season being a limited series, you know, you can't prove a negative. So you can't say, oh, we are returning. And then, of course, they did and had to move over into the drama category. I think it's similar here where you could say, yeah, we're totally greenlighting a season two. And then, like, let the Emmys happen. And then a month after the Emmys, be like, oops, actually, that all fell through. Like, I don't know what the I need more answers about what the proof is, because otherwise I think it could end up becoming a strategy of, yeah, sure, we're giving this a season two. We've seen that. I mean, you know, we just saw that with the Pete Davidson series that was greenlit for a season two. And that actually was on the heels of a few other announcements of cancellations of shows that had already been greenlit for a second season or a third season. So, you know, it is tough to really definitively prove, other than like, oh, we've have signed contracts. And, you know, it's like, yes, it could get expensive if you actually had to do all of that. But if you all you have to do is say, oh, we greenlit it, but no one's been paid anything for it, then it's real easy to change your mind later, quote unquote. So I would imagine that the Academy is going to do everything they can to make sure this doesn't become a strategy that they can kind of like game the system. But at the same time, I don't really know, short of being like, you have to invite us to set and we have to see that there's scripts being shot, like what you can do to prove. And then, you know, I still think of poor Andrea Savage's I'm Sorry, where they filmed half a season and then never aired it. So
yeah,
I want those episodes.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't give us the rest of it, just give us like a weird rough yeah. cut of those open ones. Andrea, my heart goes out to you.
Put them on YouTube or something. They should live somewhere. So here's one more interesting category thing, not necessarily about category switching or anything like that, but there are a few people this has happened to. Emma Stone could win an Oscar and an Emmy in the same year. She certainly seems like a shoo-in for a nomination. This would be in lead actress in a drama series for her work on The Curse. Robert Downey Jr. is in the same shoes. He won an Oscar this year. He is in the limited series, The Sympathizer. Well, limited series for now, could become a drama series. But like right now, the odds have him very high, seeming like a lock for a nomination, could win as well. So really, I don't know if I have a question there for you, Patrick, but just really pointing out, like, this is one of those really cool things that we could, it doesn't happen often, but it could happen for two different people this year.
But what's also, I'll flag, interesting is that you might have people nominated in two different categories this year in significant roles. Like Clive Owen just announced that he's splitting his submissions for Monsieur Spade and A Murder at the End of the World in separate categories. So because of two different projects, we may see him. He doesn't want to go against himself. So he's splitting where he's going there. So it'll, you know, lots of strategic decision making. We'd have to do some research, but I wonder who's the closest to EGOTing in a year. Who's won the most awards from various different organizations for different things. I mean, you know, obviously the people can win a Grammy and an Oscar yeah. for the same song.
Yeah.
And there's other, you know, I would think the Tonys, now that I think about it, would probably have the biggest overlap in the same year with an Oscar or an Emmy, just given the scheduling and how you can shoot things or hiatuses for TV shows. You could go do a Broadway show on your hiatus and things like that. So, but now I want to do an EW Investigates. Like, who's won the most in a year for different things?
We're going to dig into that. We will find out. We will report back on next week's episode of the podcast. You know what? Someone out there may have the answer, and they can call in and tell us because we have the phone line for you to call in, leave your comments, ask us questions. We might include those right here on the podcast. The number for that is 657-799-1566. Okay, so Patrick and I are, we're going to shut up for a quick second. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, it's my interview with We Were the Lucky Ones star Joey King. Don't go anywhere, folks. The Awardist will be right back. Welcome back to The Awardist. It is now time for the main event. We've been teasing it the whole show. You know and love her from the Kissing Booth films, from The Act, from White House Down, Fargo, Ramona and Beezus. The list goes on and on. And now she is starring in the Hulu limited series, We Were the Lucky Ones. Let me say that again. And now she is starring in the Hulu limited series, We Were the Lucky Ones, which centers on a Polish family separated during World War II. Please welcome, hello, Joey King. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I am doing really well, thank you. And thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. This series is just really, I'm so engrossed and invested in it, I think is really the right word, invested, because this family, I mean, first of all, how can you not love them? They're incredible.
They are an amazing family. I mean, that's the best part about, you know, our first episode, you really get to know these people and you really fall in love with them and you fall in love with who they are before the war happens. So you kind of get a sense of who they are, like, for real. And then as the episodes go on, we have just fallen so deeply in love with them, and we just see them going through all these scenarios and situations. And it's just so insane to think that this all really happened. It's just mind blowing.
Insane to think that it happened. Insane to think that while, of course, we're not at that place right now in our world, at that point, that's there are certainly, of course, a lot of still anti-Semitism and people being, attacked just for who they are, how they were born, where they were born. It's that's the really disheartening part of it. That this, while this feels so long ago, there are elements of it that feel like they could be happening today.
Absolutely. I think right now we're in a world experiencing extremes of all kinds of hate, you know, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, racism. It's just really, really, really sad to kind of see where we are in the world. And it is not the hope to have a show like this be relevant, you know?
Yeah.
Relevancy comes in terms of, like, you know, just, it's not just about shedding light on the Holocaust and what happened to the Jewish people. It's shedding light on what happens when hate goes unchecked, you know?
Yeah, that is a great way of putting it. Okay. There's plenty to talk to you about as it relates to this series, but something I got to ask you, I have to acknowledge that your bestie, Taylor Zakhar Perez, was my guest last week on the podcast. It's not really by design that the two of you are on back-to-back episodes, but, you know, I kind of love when something works out like that. Of course, the two of you know each other from the Kissing Booth movies, but my question, because we see you, like, you two are at the SAG Awards together and we know you're friends, but what for you is, like, at the core of that friendship? What makes the two of you click?
What if I just, like, revealed right now that we had, like, a huge falling out?
You hate each other. Oh, no. Give the tea.
I'm totally kidding. What's the core of our friendship? My God, that's a good question. You know, I think every friend that you have is even when they're all very different, is somehow a reflection of who you are as a person. And, you know, Taylor is someone who I just have so much fun with. We laugh so much when we're together. But I think that Taylor is just, he is someone who is so, so kind to other people. And it's something that I just value so much in life, is just really trying to, like, just, like, show kindness, even when it's, like, like feels, you know, even when you're having a bad day, or even when, you know, it's maybe not the easiest choice in the moment. And being friends with someone like Taylor, you know, makes me want to be even kinder. You know, he's just such a sweet soul. But I also just, I just find him to be so humorous. We have so much fun together.
Mm-hmm. Well, humor is a very important thing for sure. Did he happen to tell you, or did you hear perhaps in any interviews at one of the carpet stirring Oscar seasons, someone asked him who's the better kisser, Joey or Nicholas Galitzine?
No.
Did you know about that?
Say? No.
He said he like froze in the moment. He didn't know what to say. He was like, that's such a like, I don't know how I'm supposed to answer that question. Oh.
God, Lane, pick a person. Don't be diplomatic. Come on. Everyone wants to know. No one's excited to hear. They both are. I want to know what he thinks. I want to message him right now, damn it.
I was going to say, will you text him right now?
I'm pulling up my messages app right now.
That's funny. But yeah, that happened. By the way, the picture that you posted on Instagram, you with Kelly Clarkson.
Oh my God. How cute.
Do you know what year was that?
I'm guessing based on what I look like, maybe like 2008 or something, maybe 2007, maybe 2007. I'm not 100% sure. So that was at the Teen Choice Awards. Me and my sisters would love to go and like wait and like take photos with people. It was like so exciting for us. We had like a cousin who like worked like in the, you know, space that would like, he would work with the board. So we were just like, can we come and say hi to people? And that photo was just me after waiting for a while to meet Kelly Clarkson.
And look, now all these years later, you have that to show for. And you got to be on her talk show. And I mean, what a cool.
I know. Yeah, that's why I posted it. It was the same day as her talk show. You know, it's funny. We didn't even talk about that photo on her talk show, but I remembered it. Like as I was like about to make a post on Instagram and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to find it. And I like found it. It was like on my IMDb for some reason.
Oh, wow. They have the most obscure things. But
I know. Every now and then I'm like, what kind of photos are on here? And I'm like, ugh, I regret looking.
I think what's been so cool about the promotional tour for this series, by the way, a lot of it you have spent with Logan Lerman. You two have known each other for a long time. But what I have seen so far of the series, there's like you guys didn't necessarily get to spend any time together. So has your time, it's all been spent basically on the press tour?
No, actually, so he was in Romania a lot of the time filming different opposite scenes.
Got it. Okay.
Than me. And we shared, we both lived in the same apartment building and we would like, we're just like one floor on top of each other. So we'd walk up and down to each other's apartments and hang out all the time. Logan and I've been friends, you know, now for, you know, probably like really, really good friends for probably like nearly 4 years now, but we've known each other for a long time. And I find him to be such a wonderful human being, so talented. Him and his fiance are like some of mine and my husband's closest friends. It's just like, it's really wonderful because, you know, we get along so well and we have to spend so much time together on this press tour. So it's like, you really hope you get along with the people that you spend that much time with.
Yeah. Were one of you, did you happen to like suggest the other for this project, or that was just like by happenstance that you both landed it?
So when Tommy approached me about the project, he was telling me, he's like, you know, I'm thinking perhaps Logan Lerman for the role of Audie Quartz. And I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. I love Logan. And we also just played siblings in Bullet Train and also barely got to work together. So
that's the way it works out sometimes.
Yeah, that's the only thing I got really to do with Logan in Bullet Train was like spit in his face for one scene, which was
cool. Yeah, that's that sport. By the way, yeah, one of the things I failed to mention at the top there, listing off your credits, which that movie is just, oh my God, I love it so much.
I love
so
that
much.
Movie so much. It's so fun. It is like fun to watch.
Exactly. I would sit and watch it anytime, anywhere. And it makes me wonder if that perhaps may be one of the your answer to this next question that I have for you. You turn 25 this summer. Happy early birthday, my fellow July baby. But you've been acting for like 18 of that 25 years. And along the way, you've worked with some really incredible.
20, actually.
20? Oh, my gosh. 20 years.
I've been acting since I was four.
4 years old, 20 years. There you go. Well, along the way, working with a lot of great people in some really great titles, both movies and series. Is there an experience that just stands out among them? We'll remove this one from the equation. We won't say we were the lucky ones, but everything,
of course,
in the past. Right, right.
You know, I think they all hold a very interesting and special, like, you know, whether it was stand out for bad or good reasons, they all stand out. But, you know, obviously, I know I met my husband when I was doing the act, which was like, you know, that just, you can't get more special than that.
No.
But you know, Ramona and Beezus was such a turning point for me in my career. Like, and it sounds funny to say career, I was 9 years old, but it's true. I like was kind of going on I was starting to really get some traction, luckily enough, because I was really loving it. And I think that was my first like leading role in a movie. And I like, that was the first time I kind of felt like the responsibility of what the job entailed, you know, because the job up until that point was, you know, just simply like I was a kid. I didn't quite understand. It was just fun. Like I was just hanging out. And then like that job, I was like, oh, wow, this is like really hard. Like it takes a lot of work. And that's kind of when I fell in love with it. Cause like even at that young age, I had a sense of fulfillment. And so that one's really special for that reason. Because it kind of just made me fall in love with it.
Yeah. Well, back to We Were the Lucky Ones. The reviews have just been fantastic for this series. I don't know if you pay attention to reviews, but more
I do,
so than
unfortunately
you do. Oh well, so you've seen
this time
hope
has
a lot
been
of the
great.
Good ones. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But is there critics aside? Is there anyone in particular whose opinion matters to you most, especially as it relates to this project and story and performance?
Oh man, of course. I mean, my whole family, really. You know, I want my mom and my grandma and my sisters to really like everything I do. And you know what, though, sometimes you just have to be okay with knowing like some projects just aren't their cup of tea. And that's okay, because it doesn't mean they're not good. It just means that, you know, you're maybe going down a little bit more of an experimental path. And so over the years, it's been a lot. I mean, they're all so supportive and they'll always tell me like how proud of me they are. But like this particular project has been really special because I can feel it, like the compliments that they've given me and like the way they talk about it. It's just like a different level of like, they're so affected by it and moved. And that is so special to me. And you know, I love hearing that. And you know, just having my family, my husband, my like everyone just like feel like that kind of pride. It makes me feel so good and so happy, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this project, it's quite different from anything you've done before. So I'm curious, what challenges did this project present that you've not ever had to deal with in previous work?
I mean, I've never done a story about the Holocaust. You know, I'm a Jewish woman, and I obviously I have no lack of knowledge on the Holocaust. You know, it's something that you don't really like when you grow up in a Jewish household. It's not something you remember learning about because you always knew about it somehow. You've always been talked to about it. So, you know, this immersiveness, you know, launching myself deeper into like research and just putting yourself in the headspace of like this very, very dark time in history. And not just like, you know, this isn't like a fictional story. So like when I'm doing these scenes, just like the idea that this like really, really happened to this woman that I'm playing, it was so overwhelming sometimes that I just felt so like, the emotional well ups that happened were random and they were frequent. And it was unexpected. I'm pretty good at keeping a lid on my own, on my own emotions when I need to. But this job really showed me how it was really good that I was able to feel those things, because it was really like, it was a really hard shoot for that reason. But that's why it was beautiful. You know, it's the least we can do as actors is to feel the emotion of that, portraying a story of people who actually went through it. You know, we're not going through it for real. We're just pretending. So the least we can do is like hold space in our hearts for like the fact that this actually happened.
Yeah. And for that reason, I'm sure it's going to be a very special project, something you will hold dear for a while.
Absolutely. I mean, this is like also I want to say too, just because I think it's important to mention, like, I did have a lot of wonderful, joyous times filming it too. We had the best team of people on this show, best cast, best crew. We all got along so well. So of course we had moments of levity because we really needed that. And so having like that and having that support system, like it's such a special project for so many reasons, because even if it like, you know, it turned out beautifully and I'm so proud of that, but you know, the experience of making something is what, as the person who made the show, is what you remember. You know, people watch something and they see what's presented to them and they have no idea the behind the scenes and, you know, the emotional, whatever the hell happened on set.
Yeah.
But like, I have the memories from this set and they're so positive and wonderful. So it is just even more exciting to me that the show's doing well because the memories tied to it are really positive and special.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that that great cast. We kind of talked about them a little bit. You know, this this really wonderful family who we see. I mean, they're thriving. They're successful. They're smart. They're creative. And like you said, you spend a lot of time with them in the beginning. But then everyone, the cast members separate as the family separates. Knowing, of course, what the fate was of so many people during this time. Were you reading the scripts wondering at any moment like, oh my gosh, are any of these people who I'm here working with, are like, are their characters going to die? Or did you going in know like the long game for these characters, given that this is based on a book?
I knew. So I read the book.
Okay.
Well, and you know, well in advance. Yeah. I read it a couple times. But it was also just, you know, the, you know, what I hope comes across and what I hope is something that I'm able to portray that I do care about, hopefully being good at my job, is, you know, I had to remind myself a lot of the times, and we all did, of like, at this point, whatever scene we were doing, our characters have no idea what's going to happen next.
Right.
We have no idea what the future holds. We have no idea, like, there's just like, you have to make sure that you allow yourself the, you know, mindset that your character to some extent is completely in the dark about what their own future holds. So not to portray anything that feels like you're foreshadowing stuff that's about to happen. That's something that, you know, I mean, in any case, whether it's a fictional piece of work or a true piece of work, you know the script, you know what's going to happen. It's your job to try to portray like your character has no idea what's about to happen. And that is always a very like fun line to walk, especially when it is a true story and such heavy subject matter, because you want it to feel truly like, you know, they have no idea what's going to happen because they didn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially as it relates to your character, Helena, I mean, gosh, she has to give her own blood to Soviet soldiers. I mean, at that point and how she's feeling in that moment, I'm watching that thinking she probably thinks this is it. This is how I'm going to die, by literally giving life to other people who are killing my family. I mean, those circumstances, it's just it's beyond my mental capacity to even think what that must have felt like.
Yeah. So, I mean, just for people who are listening, like, in terms of like that episode four, that was really crazy because, you know, when Helena gets taken away by the Soviets at the end of the episode, at that point, she has no idea, again, talk about foreshadowing, she has no idea where they're taking her. She doesn't know if she's about to be killed, arrested, sent away. She doesn't know if she's ever going to see her family again. She doesn't know anything. She has no idea. And she walks away with this.
And she has no idea where her own family is.
No, she walks away with her head held high to some degree and just is really scared. And, you know, and then she is taken to the hospital. And, you know, I think probably at first for her, she's like, okay, they're asking me to give blood. It could be worse. And then they just keep going and keep going, keep going. And, you know, it is just one of the many harrowing things that this entire family experienced. And one of the many harrowing things that we'll see Helena experience throughout the series. But there's many moments in the series as like Helena that I felt would like have changed a person. You know, I don't want to speak for Helena because she's no longer alive, but I just can imagine that like each thing that happened that was just beyond comprehension had to change her a bit and make her just skyrocket into growing up way too fast. And it just, you know, it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah, indeed. We were talking about episode Spore there, which, by the way, the end of that episode is just brutal, with Emil and the truckloads of people given.
I just want to give a real big shout out to the wonderful Hadass Yaron. She plays my sister. Yeah. She plays Mila in the series. And she is just the most, she's so talented. And she's also just the sweetest human being. Like, yeah. Every single person in this show that had to portray these hard things, because I cared about them so much, we all cared about each other so much. We were all so worried about one another. And we cared so much about each other. I was there the day they shot that. I stayed and I watched that scene, the end of episode 4. And it just, like, you know, so it just stays with you. You know, it was one of those days where we all kind of had our emotional moments, because we were like, just like, this is beyond what anyone should ever have to go through.
Wow. I can't even imagine that. Of course, like you said, you're acting, you're not experiencing these things, but that's one of those moments, picking up shovels and digging.
I mean, the reason why I say that, you know, like, we're acting, you know, because for me, like, the heaviness that you feel while doing this is, like, it's so immense, but I never want to sound, like, precious about it. Like, I never want to be like, and we carried that burden. Like, it sounds so, like, you know, I don't want to sound so, like, uppity about it, because at the end of the day, like, these people that, like, were playing, they went through it. And so, like, yes, that emotion was such a, like, a heavy weight on us and was so immense. And I'm like, truthfully, when I do interviews, like, I do minimize how heavy it was, because I don't want to sound like, you know, a precious, pompous, like, person. But, like, if I'm being honest, like, those kinds of days, it was just, like, sometimes, like, too much to bear. It was so intense.
Yeah. Something interesting I think we see here is that, you know, Helena's siblings, some they're in relationships, or, you know, they get involved with people. But when she's presented that same opportunity with Adam, by the way, played by Sam Wolf, who's also just great, she gives the I like you, but let's just be friends. There's that moment, which, like, huge womp womp. But I do feel like that says a lot about who she is, her priorities. Like, how did that inform you and your portrayal of her?
First of all, yes, Sam Wolf is just a wonderful, wonderful co-star, great person, love him. I love Helena for this. I think we're going through, while watching the show, a war, and how serious and heavy it is. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said that, like, she, even with these circumstances, even though she cares so deeply for him, you know, she doesn't want to just be rash and be, you know, just throw all caution to the wind because there's a war. You know, she's trying with everything in her might to focus on the fact that hopefully they will survive this and there will be a future. And in that future, she doesn't want to do anything that she's going to regret. And, you know, she's stubborn. She's so stubborn. She really cares about him. And there's times as an audience member where you want to be like, Helena, what are you doing? Like, this man loves you, you love him. And she's very confusing. I mean, she's very push-pull with her relationship with Adam. And it was really a really wonderful thing to portray, because, you know, all of the siblings, all of the other couples in the show, they're so certain about one another. They're so tied to the end. And I think it's really real and really raw to see an experience of someone who, even with the circumstances, isn't so sure. Even though those circumstances might thrust someone into thinking that they're sure, even if they're not. And Helena was just like, you know, no, I guess I'm not sure. I don't want to rush in anything. And I admire her for that. But also I'm like, but he's such a good man. Adam's such a good man. You know you love him. Why are you second guessing it? Why are you getting in your own way? With the Adam thing, Helena really gets in her own way, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and a good point that you bring up, you said there's of course lots of war and death and lots going on around, but looking to the future, I think, is what's really important about what you said, because this is a story also about survival, like how to find the hope in the midst of everything that's going on around you, and you know what it takes to come out on the other side.
Yeah,
and so I think there's really the story is worth watching for those things as well. It's not just about the death
I think that when I think about this show, I don't love when people are like, you know, they kind of try to market it as like, oh, this is so educational. I'm like, sure, you will learn something new, but like,
yeah,
you know, it's about, you know, we want you to fall in love with these people, build compassion in your own real life through like watching a show like this. Yeah. And of course there is an educational element to it, but like, that is not necessarily like the way to get people to be excited about watching something, of course. And I think that this show is really compelling. You want to see what's going to happen next. You want to watch the next episode. You love these people. You care about their relationships. You care about how they're fighting through this and all the roadblocks that get in their way. You know, it's a really, I'm very proud of the show. I do think it's a really great show, if I have to say myself. And it's so nice to be part of something that I'm so proud of. You know, when I do these press rings and stuff, I always love press. I really enjoy it. I think it's very fun, but it's extra fun when you're extremely passionate about something you're promoting.
Yeah. Well, You've kind of been down this road once before with The Act. You got your first Emmy nomination for your performance in that limited series as Gypsy Rose Blanchard, who's, of course, been saturating headlines the past few months or so. But I'm curious, what did that series and that, you know, Emmy season mean to you? What did you take away from that?
That was amazing. I mean, that was a really huge whirlwind, but like not in a way where it like I like didn't soak any of it in. I really soaked it all in, but it just like, it's crazy that it ever happened. I was so excited. You know, I've been doing this for such a long time, but that was my first time ever being part of that particular circle of like, and being a nominee and really kind of doing this particular kind of press. And that was a very, very exciting time in my life. I look on it so fondly. That was, you know, my first kind of go around with playing a real person who, not necessarily my first go around, but my first like most notable one, my first, you know, and it just felt, doing the show was really, really exciting. It was a very fun thing to shoot, but it's also very scary because I thought to myself, like, you know, like, if I do this not well, I don't know if I'll ever work again, because this is one of those ones, if you mess it up, it's like, you know, it could kill a career kind of thing. So I was like scared. I was really scared. I mean, I was proud of the work I was doing, but you just hope to God it's received well and that it's, you know, edited well. And I was, you know, blown away by the reaction. So appreciative, so grateful. And it just, yeah, that was quite something that time. It was so
cool. Yeah. That one worked out all right for you.
Yeah, that was a really sure. cool. Yeah. That was a really cool moment. Like just going to those fancy schmancy events, being a nominee was like, it really was like, it felt so special, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, with all of the new developments in her life, would you be open to portraying her again? Whether it's even just a TV movie, or if they decide to do a, you know, another go of the limited series, a new season of that? Because I mean, there's a lot of material to work
with. There's a lot of
right
material.
Now, her release and the divorce and cosmetic surgery. Like,
I always say never say never, but I don't think it's something that's on anyone's radar right now. Like in terms of my own and being, you know, jumping in there again. But you know, I never want to say never, but I also just, you know, I don't think that is something that's going to happen anytime soon. But mostly I just, you know, I wish her the most peaceful, free life that she can possibly have now.
Yeah. Lastly here, I got to ask about A Family Affair, that film coming up. Accurate to say Nicole Kidman's playing your mom in that, correct?
That is accurate to say, yes.
Yeah. I mean, what were your like hopes, expectations of what that would be versus like what was it really like?
Man, you know, you just don't know when you like, I don't know if I had any expectations necessarily, because I feel like Nicole Kidman, like that name and that presence is like the size of the moon to me. It's like something that you're like, no way, like no freaking way that I get to do this right now. So going in, I was just like, oh my God, I hope she likes me. Like, I don't know. And then we met and she was just so fantastic, just so elegant, but also fun and like carefree and relaxed and just like kick her feet up. We're all sitting cross-legged doing script notes together. And I just found her to be so, I was really enamored with her. And I was just like, wow, you're so cool. And then as we just worked together more and more, we became like friendly and like we became like friends. And like, I just couldn't believe it. And I still can't believe it. She's like a gal I will like reach out to sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, right, Joey, shut up. Like, that's so silly, but it's so cool. She's just spectacular. And I love her and I love playing her daughter. And the movie, I just saw it recently. Yeah. It's so funny. I think it's so good. So I'm really excited about that.
Yes, I will be seeing that one very soon and I can't wait. My takeaway from that is you're saying you have Nicole Kidman's phone number in your cell phone. And that,
yes, I allegedly do have that.
Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly, reportedly. Well, look, like you said, that film is this summer, but you don't have to wait to see Joey in anything because We Were the Lucky Ones is on Hulu right now. New episodes are airing Thursdays. So be sure to watch that series. It is fantastic, as is she in it. Joey, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Love her so much. She's just always such a good interview and a good time and seems like a very kind person. I also love that the awardist is in its Kissing Booth 2 era, I guess, with Taylor Zucar Perez last week and Joey King this week. We just got to get Jacob in here, I guess. You know, I'm glad you asked about Gypsy Rose. Blanchett would love to, I thought she was fantastic in that role and would love to see her reprise now that there's so much more of that story to tell. But, you know, I think people would also, Jared, you didn't ask the hard question, which is like when she's reuniting with Taylor. So,
Oh, I know. Well, demerit. I mean, I know. Dang it. I would love to see them get back together and do something. I did ask her if she knew, you know, you heard there, I asked if she knew that he had been asked who's a better kisser. I'm really curious now if she texted him and was like, sir, why didn't you say me? We got to get to the bottom of that too. But yeah, the act was such a fantastic limited series. I think what might have to happen there, kind of like how Peter Morgan did with The Crown, like you kind of need some space and distance from the story and just kind of let life happen around that. And then you can go back to it, with, you know, a more focused vision, for what the story would be that you want to tell. So I could see that it maybe would happen.
If only Taylor looked more like her soon-to-be ex-husband.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go. There's a way we could make it happen for sure. All right, folks. So one more time, I'm going to give to you the phone number where you can call in, leave your comments, questions, concerns, and we may air those right here on the Awardist podcast. That number is 656-799-1566. 657-799-1566. You can also check the episode descriptions on whatever podcast platform you're on, and you can find it in there as well. All right, so that is it for this week's episode of The Awardist. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Anytime.
And thanks so much to all of you for listening. If you like what you're hearing here on The Awardist, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials. We are at EW on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag me at Jared Hall, and Patrick is at Patrick Gomez LA. We will see you back here next week. The Awardist is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.